Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we preview the 26th annual Midwest Renewable Energy Fair, which gets underway not this weekend, but next weekend on Friday, June 19th, Saturday, June 20th, and Sunday, June 21st at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association headquarters in Custer, Wisconsin. That's on Highway 10 east of Stevens Point. Now, that weekend, the tiny hamlet of Custer will grow into one of the most influential cities in the Midwest, as thousands of people attend the workshops, view the exhibits and the experimental cars, sample the food, listen to the music, and are inspired by the keynote speakers. We've got two of those keynotes with us today. In the second half of our show, you will get a chance to talk to Amy Goodman, host and producer of the influential Democracy Now! Amy is the keynote on Saturday, June 20th. And with us for the first half of the show, we have the keynote for Friday, June 19th, John Wellinghoff, the immediate past chair of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, described by the Washington Post as a new breed of chairman who represented a monumental shift in energy policy. With us for the full hour today, in our studio in Wausau, Nick Hyla. He's the executive director of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. Now, as always, we are talking your phone call. We are taking your phone calls today. And if you want to talk to Amy Goodman, just give us a call in the second half of the show. If you want to talk to John Wellinghoff or Nick Hyla, you can call us right now at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. John Wellinghoff and Nick Hyla, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much, Glenn.
And let's start out with you, Nick, and give us a sense of what's going to be going on in tiny little Custer in a couple of weeks. It is the 26th annual fair. It's grown throughout the years. 20,000 people attend every year, more than 200 exhibitors and 200 workshops, great food. And, of course, I mentioned, too, the keynote speakers. What else are we going to experience this year?
Yeah, maybe I could start with a little bit about a background about the fair. It started in 1990 as kind of a cultural movement in response to the first Iraq War and issues around energy, and has grown since then. This year on Friday, we'll have a lot of focus on solar electric, or solar photovoltaic. So, especially policy, options for home and businesses. And again, a keynote from John Wellinghoff, introduced by former Public Service Commissioner Chair Eric Callisto. There'll be all kinds of fun things. We have outside of the seriousness of the policy debates, we have a green mini demo derby, so a solar-powered remote control car demo derby, so that'll be fun. and obviously music and networking and, as you said, 250 exhibits representing businesses and groups that are helping home and businesses use less energy and produce their own energy.
And we at Wisconsin Public Radio are proud to be sponsors again this year. I'll be there on the Saturday, June 20th. Our executive producer of Route 51, Rick Ryer, will be there on Friday, and we're pumped. I mean, it's just a wonderful thing. He's excited to see John, and I'm excited to see Amy. So there you go. You're going to have alternative energy cars again. That display always attracts a lot of attention.
Yeah, we're really trying at the MREA to grow the participation of auto dealers in that show and really promote the use of electric vehicles. And we're really proud to have former FERC Chairman John Wellinghoff there. You know, when he became chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, he was really given a heavy lift, which included strengthening the grid to allow for more renewable energy, to make it more efficient, and to integrate what they call demand response, which is real-time energy pricing, and the inclusion of electric vehicles. And from that and the tech innovations that we're seeing, you know, Tesla is building a building right now in New Mexico that will be the second biggest building in the world by square footage, producing more lithium-ion batteries than are currently produced across the globe. It is truly a time for revolutions in all kinds of energy fields, and electric vehicles surely are at the forefront of that.
Well, let's bring John Wellinghoff into the conversation. John, you served as chair of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission from 2009 to 2013. You spent a total of 7 years with the commission, and for those of you who don't realize what the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is, that's the agency that regulates the interstate transmission of electricity, natural gas, and oil, and that includes interstate pipelines, hydroelectric projects, and so on. John, what were your greatest challenges you faced during your time with the agency?
Well, Glenn, first I want to say I'm very excited to come to Custer. You all have made me excited about this fair, which I've never attended, so it sounds like a tremendous event. It's always great to actually be at the grassroots with people who are engaged in energy activities. And I'll tell you, I think the greatest things that I did at FERC relate to the grassroots issues of the fact that consumers are now starting to participate in the grid in really very meaningful ways. I mean, when you plug in your electric car, when you, you know, put in a new efficient LED light bulb, when you put a solar panel on your house, you're actually putting in assets in your house that you could actually use to support the grid and actually monetize in ways that people can lower their overall costs by using these assets as part of the whole grid support system. And so one of the things that I did it for, I think was very important, was allow consumers to ultimately use those assets in what they call demand response to change their loads at different times of the day, and by doing so, get paid to do that. And actually, we demonstrated, for example, with electric cars, that you can use those cars to provide a particular grid service called regulation service, which is basically the service of keeping the grid stable by changing loads in very small increments on signals from the grid operator. And we demonstrated that at FERC in November of 2007, that an electric car could actually provide that kind of service. And so one of the grid operators, PJM, which is a grid operator that provides service all the way from New Jersey to Chicago, was able to allow electric cars to integrate into its system. And doing so, they were actually paying those cars somewhere between $7 to $9 per day just to provide that service into the grid. So it's really very exciting that, in fact, consumers now can be part of the grid and be part of the grid in ways that actually can help them control their overall energy costs.
So this is what we mean by demand response and smart grid technology?
In part, yes. I mean, what it all comes down to, it comes down to the consumer's ability to interact on a dynamic way with the grid in a daily basis so that they can, in fact, control their total energy costs.
Have you gotten opposition from some of the big utility companies for these changes to pay some of these providers?
You get opposition primarily from the generators, because a lot of these services that consumers can provide, which include what they call ancillary services that, again, regulate the grid, keep it stable, and energy and capacity services that can be provided as well by people changing their loads at various times. Those are a lot of services that actually the generators have historically provided. So what it is it's competition. It's competition for them. And in fact, you know, they've in fact filed a suit indicating that they believe that FERC had no jurisdiction to incorporate these kinds of things in wholesale markets. That suit actually succeeded at a lower court level, the district court level in D.C., and now it's on appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. So we're going to see, based upon the U.S. Supreme Court's final decision of this case as to whether or not consumers can continue to participate in these wholesale markets and whether FERC can continue to structure those wholesale markets to allow consumers to do so.
Now,
the generators are opposing that directly because they see that as competition to their services that they provide as large central station generators, coal plants, nuclear power plants, gas plants, et cetera.
Now, John, isn't sort of the central constitutional question here whether or not it should be states that regulate the interstate transmission of electricity?
It really comes down to whether or not these types of things that consumers are doing, that is, whether they, you know, change their loads at certain times and then take that change and based upon a signal from a wholesale grid operator actually can monetize that in a wholesale market. The question really comes down to whether or not that's a wholesale or a retail product. There's no question that the states have jurisdiction over retail activities and FERC has jurisdiction over wholesale activities. The question is whether when you sell a change in load into a general market, which I believe there's no question it's a wholesale product, the question that the D.C. Circuit Court answered, I believe, wrongly, mm-hmm. they said it was a retail product and therefore it should be under state jurisdiction. So the lines, though, are blurring, and they're blurring because consumers are now being able to cross the lines and use their internal activities, whether it's a PV system on their house or whether it's, again, changing their loads internally, use those activities in ways that do directly affect wholesale markets, and no question. For example, demand response in PJM last year in 2014 reduced costs to consumers in that market by $11.8 billion. So, you know, there's no question that demand response has a direct and substantial impact on those wholesale markets and can, in fact, reduce total costs for consumers in those wholesale markets. So that's the real controversy. The controversy is whether or not consumers acting in that way and providing those services into those markets is a wholesale or a retail product.
Okay. Well, it's a little bit in the weeds, but we'll see where the Supreme Court comes down on that. John, you were interviewed recently regarding national security issues and the grid, and I want to get into that because right. this seems to really make it kind of imperative that we have more people providing alternate energy sources into the grid
right.
for national
right.
security reasons. According to an article in Forbes, a well-placed nuclear device could wipe out electric transmission for the entire country. America would literally go dark, no phones, no money, no heat, no running water, no medicine, no police. And the former CIA chief, Jim Woolsey, says two-thirds of the population could die due to starvation, disease, exposure, or violence linked to the breakdown of society. That seems far-fetched to a lot of people, but it all comes down to the fact that we have these nodes which are centrally located for the transmission and distribution of energy, and if they're taken out, the whole grid goes down. Am I getting that right?
I think Forbes overstated it. There's no question that Forbes exaggerated the situation. However, the last thing that you said is correct, that there are a finite number of these central high-voltage substations, nodes in essence, in the country, and if there was a coordinated attack on those nodes, and again, there's controversy of whether or not it's possible to coordinate such an attack, et cetera. But if there was, certainly could take down large areas of the country. And all we have to do is look at August of 2003, right? August of 2003, a line in Ohio touched a tree and the whole northwest went out, or northeast went out. The whole northeast part of the country was black in August of 2003. So ultimately, we still are in that type of a situation where a very small event can result in a very large outage for a very long time. And really, the only way that I see to really guard against that is to go to more distributed systems, to go to systems that are more localized and that can break apart an island and isolate from the main grid, so you don't have these cascading outage systems that we have now that are dependent upon these nodes, that if one or several nodes goes out in a region, then the whole region goes down. That is an absolute fact, and so the way to alleviate that or ensure that that doesn't happen is to break those systems into smaller systems ultimately. They should be able to come together and stay together for market purposes and for economic purposes at times when there is no issues with respect to either a physical or cyber attack on them, or a
this is an argument for people putting solar panels on their house. I mean, when you put solar panels on your house, and to a certain extent, you're providing energy not only to your own home but to the grid at large. You are serving a national security function by making the grid less susceptible to this kind of an attack.
Right. There's no question about that, and certainly also to the extent that you put in battery systems that, you know, you talked at the top of the hour about the Tesla facility. Nick was talking about that. That is in Nevada, by the way, not New Mexico, my home state. That, you know, that type of thing by putting in PV system, putting in batteries in, that you can isolate your system from the rest of the grid does help support the whole system. That's correct.
So eventually what we want to do in this country, according to your perspective, is get to the point where we have hundreds, maybe thousands of individual sources of electricity that will go into the grid instead of just a few which would be susceptible to an attack which would cause national security problems.
Well, we already have hundreds of thousands of individual sources with the hundreds of thousands of solar systems that are the solar PV systems that are currently in. But we do need to get rid of millions, literally millions of systems in, and we're going to get there. We're getting there very rapidly, actually.
Nick Hyla?
Yeah, so, I mean, just last year alone, a new solar electric system, a solar PV system, was installed every 4 minutes in the United States. And if you look at when the MREA started in 1990 and costs today, costs have come down 80-fold. And just in the last few years alone, we're talking about 50% reductions in price. And I think the real central issue here, when I look at it, is until just recently, gross domestic product was tied to energy consumption, meaning the more the economy grew, the more energy we used. And just about 5 years ago, we started to see those lines diverge, meaning we're not as using as much electricity because of the availability of energy efficiency, the constant rise of electricity prices, and now the affordability of generation that we can put on our houses. You know, we're not demanding. Demand is flat, but the economy is growing. And this really puts a lot of pressure on the utility business model. You know, the regulated utilities, monopoly utilities, they make money by investing in large assets. And to put it another way, you know, they have pretty much secured rates of return. In Wisconsin, it's up to 12.7%. And so it's a really good investment. So investors want to put in assets. However, if we have more generation than we need, which we do in Wisconsin currently, and there's no prospect for increases in energy consumption, energy efficiency and distributed generation technologies like solar are more affordable. How do we then look at the utility business model that instead of having a monopolized, opaque, non-competitive, and I would say very politically vulnerable now with Citizens United and all of the moneyed interests that can basically capture a regulatory body and advance policies that that benefit those with the most lobbying influence? How do we change that into something that's more distributed, more open, more transparent, more secure, more robust, has more consumer participation? I mean, I think an analogy that I often hear used is the telecommunications industry. And everybody is now carrying around a smartphone in their pocket. And 15 years ago, we were all on landlines.
You got it. John Wellinghoff, if you could react to what Nick Hyla just said.
Well, no, he's absolutely correct. We need to moved to a completely different model. In fact, there was a competition that was undertaken by a group called the Solar Electric Power Association, SEPA. They said, look, let's design what we're going to call the 51st state. That was the name of the competition. We're going to design a new utility system from the ground up with, you know, a complete open platform. Let's look at what it would look like. And so they asked people to write papers in to that competition. I wrote a paper in with a couple of co-authors, James Tong and Jenny Yu, and 12 other people submitted papers to that 51st state competition regarding what the new utility of the future would look like. And actually, our paper was selected as one of the top three papers. And the idea that we posed to them was that what we need to do is have an open, transparent, competitive platform that at the distribution level provides for open market structures that allow consumers to participate in that platform and allow all entrepreneurs to come from, you know, the outside to provide solar PV, to provide demand response, energy efficiency, to provide other grid services to consumers, and to allow consumers choice, to allow consumers to have choices, to be able to choose those services and have an array of those services, and do that to craft their total energy package in a way that they can control their costs and maximize their benefits for the use of solar systems, for the use of efficient energy systems, for the use of other things within their own homes and business.
John, we're quickly running out of time. I knew this would go too quickly. But I want you to touch on wind energy. We've been talking about solar. How important is wind energy to a stable electric grid? And the reason I'm asking that is that here in Wisconsin, when Governor Walker was elected, they put in new siting restrictions for wind farms, and the wind energy business basically just ground to a halt in this state.
Yeah.
We had 1,000 jobs that were ready to go. Those jobs vanished, and we haven't really had any new wind turbine generation to speak of since then. And now the governor wants like a $250,000 study to determine whether or not wind farms pose a health hazard to people. What's your reaction to all of that? Because you're gonna encounter it when you come to Wisconsin in a week and a half.
Well, I'll tell you, absent those kinds of restrictions, wind has traditionally been the cheapest thing on the grid. So to stop consumers from having choice to choose a wind resource is to say consumers are going to have to pay higher prices. And wind has been signing contracts anywhere from, 2.5 to 3 cents a kilowatt hour. There are no other central station resources that I know, nuclear, coal, gas, hydro, you name it, that can come in at a marginal cost that cheaply. So, you know, I think it's very short-sighted to restrict wind in any way. And I think the history has been that you can take care of siting issues, and I don't know of any health issues that have really been proven to be issues with wind. So I think that
John, let me get Nick to respond to that, and then we're going to have to say goodbye and hook up with Amy Goodman. Nick?
Yeah, I will say, you know, one of the interesting things is that, we're a 50-state experiment, and in Wisconsin we have seen over the past 5 years, some more and more restrictive policies that reduce the penetration of wind energy, reduce the ability for homes and businesses to invest in solar PV. And we exist in the Midwest, where in Iowa, they have a tremendous amount of wind energy. They're one of the leading states. Same with Minnesota. They're forwarding policies that are making it easier and more accessible for consumers and businesses to deploy solar and be part of this great energy efficiency and local clean energy economy. And my fear is that we're doing ourselves a disservice. Solar and wind are great job creators. They're local. We import all our energy now. And if you want to hear more about this, please come to the Energy Fair June 19th and hear John and many other speakers address this very issue.
Nick Hyla will be with us in the next half hour. John Wellinghoff, thanks so much for being with us for the first half of the show. And again,
thank you, Glenn.
John will be speaking Friday, June 19th at the Energy Fair. Hang on, we're going to hook up with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! When we come back, I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Rain at the car off spring. Oh, yeah. Green country, cool and friendly life. And green country, bright like an ocean. I'm quite like a mountain.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Gail Ambrosius Chocolatier and Von Steel Winery. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
Come on, people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together, try to love one another right now.
We are back on Route 51, previewing the 26th Annual Midwest Renewable Energy Fair, which takes place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, June 19th, 20th, and 21st, in rural Custer, east of Stevens Point, off of Highway 10. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our keynote speaker, John Wellinghoff, of the formerly of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, who joined us for the first half of the show. Nick Hyla, Executive Director of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, remains with us, and we are joined now by someone that really needs no introduction, Amy Goodman, who is the executive producer and the journalist behind Democracy Now!, a program that is carried on more than 1,300 radio and television stations around the world. If you'd like a chance to talk to Amy, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Amy?
Amy, with you.
Yeah, it is so good to have you with us right now. And I'm going to try to put you on hold and see if I can do that. Hang on just a second here. And every time I hit the hold button, we are dropping you instead.
Oh, I can hear you fine.
All right.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. I'll tell you what I think we're going to have to do, though. I'm going to have to call you back on your cell phone. Can
okay,
I do that?
Perfect.
And what I'm going to do is cue up Jesse Colin Young here again for just a second. We're going to call you right back. Hang up the phone, and I want to make sure that we can get callers and you talking at the same time. So,
terrific.
Hang on, folks. We'll be back with Amy in just a second.
Smile on your brother. Everybody get together. Try to love one another right now. Come on, people now. Smile.
All right, Amy Goodman, can you hear me now?
I can hear you perfectly.
All right, I love live radio. Let's let's start off with what you're going to be talking about on Saturday. What are the points that you want to make when you're at the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair? And again, it's not this Saturday, it's a Saturday after this coming one.
That's right, and I really look forward to coming out to Wisconsin. There's so much to discuss when it comes to renewable energy. We have to talk about new and old ideas. You know, Democracy Now! Has been going to the UN Climate Summit since Copenhagen. From Copenhagen to Cancun, from Doha to Durban, from Warsaw, most recently to Peru. And of course, we'll be in Paris because that's where a binding summit will be taking place. We're on the face of a precipice. And, you know, it's not like theoretical. We know from the climate in this country, what California is dealing with, the terrific drought that is requiring mandatory action, cutting back on use of water, to what's taking place in India. over 2,300 heat deaths because the heat is just so intense. Clearly, we have to do something about this. There is a wall that is being built now between two countries, I think between India and Bangladesh, to prevent climate refugees from moving from one country to another. These are very serious times.
Well, the Pentagon and President Obama both say that climate change is a national security issue.
It is. The Pentagon has put out a report, which George Bush originally suppressed, that says climate change is the issue of the 21st century. So they know full well that wars will be fought over resources, and we have to change our whole approach on this planet. For example, we know wars have been fought for years over oil. It is so painful to think about, over fossil fuels. I think of this joke of a kid turning to his father, talking about Iraq, and saying, "What's our oil doing under their sand?" No, it's not ours. And you have the supreme irony that's taking place right now in the Arctic. You know, just yesterday on Democracy Now, we had Ben Stewart on, who wrote a book about the Arctic 30. Those are the 28 Greenpeace activists and two journalists who went up to the Arctic 2 years ago to stop Gazprom, that's the Russian oil company, from drilling. They were ultimately taken forcibly to Murmansk in Russia, and they were held for more than 2 months in prison. They faced 15 years in prison for piracy as they tried to stop the oil ship from drilling for oil. Now, think about this. And Paul McCartney wrote a very, the Beatles wrote a very interesting introduction to Ben Stewart's book, the communications director of Greenpeace, describing this incredible attempt that Greenpeace made to stop the oil drilling. Paul McCartney wrote, "It still baffles me," he said, "how it is that we have created global warming, that, you know, burning off these fossil fuels, the oil that's drilled from the earth, to heat up the earth to the point where the Arctic ice has melted, which, by the way, is a threat to us all. And because the Arctic ice is melting, now more oil companies are moving into the Arctic, like Shell," you know, major protests in Seattle where the Shell rig is docking to, because President Obama and the administration have agreed to allow Shell to start to drill in the Arctic. So the supreme irony that we have created a situation that threatens us all, the Arctic ice is melting. And
that frees up more, that frees up more land for oil exploration.
To come and drill.
And my understanding, too, is that an area of Canada in the far north, primarily inhabited by Inuit people, is particularly susceptible to this new oil exploration.
I mean, yes, all of these areas are sensitive. And, you know, from the Inuit to the indigenous people of Canada dealing with the Keystone XL pipeline, which they've been protesting so much, which would transport Canada's dirty tar sands oil across the United States to the Gulf of Mexico, where no matter what the conservatives, and I'm not even going to say conservative, because I think you can be conservative and be deeply concerned about this, but what the pro-oil business community is trying to tell us is for our own good, for us to become energy independent. We need this tar sands oil from Canada. But the supreme irony is this is a pipeline that crosses the United States. It won't be used in the United States. This oil will be then sent off to places like China.
1-800
the indigenous people of Canada are saying, no, you're destroying our sacred land.
1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, that's 1-800-780-9742. Amy Goodman, here in Wisconsin, 18 science positions in the Department of Natural Resources Bureau of Science Services are going to be eliminated. And this is after some Republican lawmakers questioned their work on the effects of climate change on our forests and lakes, and also questioned their work on possible negative impacts of mining activity in the state. And the director of the State Land Board, Tia Nelson, and other staffers have been told by the board of directors of that agency that they are no longer allowed to talk about climate change or do work on climate change while on the job. Tia Nelson, the daughter of Gaylord Nelson, the Wisconsin senator who was the founder of Earth Day. So this is what's happening in the state of Wisconsin right now, which you will be visiting in a week and a half. I'm wondering if you could comment on these local developments for us.
Well, that's really interesting, and it reminds me of during the Bush administration. And mind you, the Obama administration, although the rhetoric is much more progressive in terms of we must deal with climate change. President Obama has said that over and over. But when it comes to actually dealing with it, well, for example, the Keystone XL pipeline has not been stopped, although the Obama administration has put off a decision on it. But that reminds me of the Bush years when you had government websites being vacuumed, the words global warming and climate change being vacuumed off government websites. That's what this reminds me of in Wisconsin and how important it is that we deal with this directly. And, you know, I don't think this is a liberal or conservative issue. Climate change affects us all. We have to deal with it, and limiting the agencies that would deal with it, to say the least, short-sighted. We're talking about lives, the lives and livelihoods of people all over this country. And yes, we must change.
And
we have changed to renewables.
And Amy Goodman, we have seen predictions that the worst case scenario, northern Wisconsin, which is renowned for its pine forests and its pristine trout streams and beautiful lakes, would have a climate similar to that of Missouri if the worst case scenario unfolds. I want Nick Hyla to step in here. He's been waiting patiently to ask you a question.
Well, it's an honor to be on the program with you here, Amy. I came to your first keynote speech at the Energy Fair 11 years ago. And I've read all your books. And the thing that I think is most interesting to me now is really twofold. The first is that, you know, these issues, as Amy has referenced, we've been talking about climate change for decades now, and I think one of the interesting trends is that we are more capable to deal with this now than ever, and as we mentioned in the first hour, the declining costs of renewable energy, the increased consumer access, the local economic development benefits, all these are very real and are attracting Fortune 500 companies to invest. There is a major global movement to invest in renewable energy that strengthens local economies and that creates these new local energy economies. At the same time, you see this manifestation of resistance from the moneyed interests, and we see that. I see that very clearly in Wisconsin and all over the U.S., actively trying to hold down these new markets that allow for consumer participation, that have all these benefits, and I think one trend that I really see that I'm really excited about is that so many people that have been involved in these issues are now becoming leaders of institutions. They support this, and my hope is that we can continue to work together to break the sound barrier, as Amy said, and to get past this kind of rhetoric and all of the politicking around these issues, and help people understand how good this is.
Amy, I want you to hold your thoughts. I've got to take a quick break, and then I want to get to as many phone calls as we can get to for the remainder of the program. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to talk to Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! That's 1-800-780-9742. We're previewing the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include the Edward J. Okray Foundation, Bernie's Rock Shop, and St. Mary's University Winona. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Northwind Renewable Energy of Stevens Point, designing and installing solar systems, highly efficient wood boiler systems, and providing deep energy retrofits to buildings. Northwind's project portfolio is available at northwindre.com.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Ah, what a wonderful world it could be. We're previewing the 26th annual Midwest Renewable Energy Fair, which takes place not this weekend, but the following weekend in Custer, east of Stevens Point. We've got Nick Hyla of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association with us, and Amy Goodman, the keynote speaker for Saturday, June 20th. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Amy, let's go to Ray in Rhinelander, who has been waiting patiently. Ray, you're on Route 51 with Amy and Nick.
Well, thank you, all of you, especially you, Amy. You're definitely a pioneer on what's going on politically and environmentally, et cetera, with this. You know, this all started with Rachel Carson and Silent Spring many decades ago. And it keeps evolving to the point where the public awareness, the scientific awareness is out there. You know, people can't hide in the sand anymore and say this isn't this or this is that. Our state right now is in such a political upheaval now with our governor and corporations and et cetera, et cetera. Also, our state is very unique because this is one of the few places in the world, in upper Wisconsin, there is more water aquifers, streams, under the ground, lakes, than anywhere around. And we're all concerned here about the future of this. So we're glad that you're visiting our state and what you can ad lib to all this. And we just really appreciate you being here at the Energy Fair. And like I said, there's a lot going on here. My main focus here quickly is on the money issue about individuals being able to have renewable resources to public usage, to co-oping this. And we need to all get together here to bring this together to make this more feasible. So with that, I'll take your comment off the air, and thank you once again for coming to my state.
All right, Ray, thanks for the phone call. Amy Goodman.
Oh, well, I'm really excited to be coming to Custer and to be coming back to the Renewable Energy Fair. You know, when we talk to people on the...
Amy?
I've
got you...
There we go. I just heard a dial tone for a second.
Right.
But as you said, Greg, we're talking on live radio.
That's
how it works. From Democracy Now!, I know it well, the challenges that we all face. But, you know, I went to Stanford University last Friday, and we broadcast from there. And I had two scientists on in climate change. One of them was named Mark Jacobson. And he's come up with a 50-state plan for renewable energy. And I always like to then ask them about their own personal lives and how they live up to it. And here is a, you know, the Stanford professor who hasn't paid an electric bill in years. And it's fascinating. You think about it. This is not just an idealistic dream. This is about saving money. And I'm sure Wisconsinites care about that. He electrified his home back in 2005, putting solar panels on the roof, got an electric car, switched out the gas heaters for water and air for electric heat pumps, and got energy-efficient appliances and hooked up to a solar battery. I mean, this is, we could be on the cutting edge of renewable energy technology if we really deeply care about jobs in this country. Renewable energy is where it's at, whether we're talking wind, whether we're talking solar. And I think what happens is the corporations certainly see the trend. There's no reason China should be the leader on this. They see the trend, but they want to monopolize the market. And before they get, you know, a firm footing in this, they're hanging on to the very last drop of oil to drill it out of the earth. And that's why we, as citizens of this country, have to weigh in. This is profitable for everyone, and you can be sure it'll be profitable for them as well, so they don't lose out either.
Let's go to
the kinds of issues we have to talk about, and I really appreciate you talking about Rachel Carson because she is one of my heroines.
Let's go to Tony in Athens. Tony, you're on Route 51 with Amy Goodman and Nick Hyla.
Thanks for having me on. Glenn and Nick and Amy, I'm huge fans of all your work here. And I am an organic farmer, and I'm doing a CSA delivery today, actually, and distributing flyers for the Energy Fair, and I go every year. And in organics, we talk about the organic industrial complex. So you have this positive thing, organic agriculture, but it's being taken over by large corporations and, mm-hmm. and sort of monopolized in that way. And I was wondering if you could comment on the same thing happening in renewable energy, because I've invested in renewable energy, and I want to keep it broad, and I want to have an energy democracy. I want to have a broad-based energy democracy. And I know we need investment for larger-scale projects, but what are your thoughts on keeping this a broad-based movement and making sure renewable energy is broadly accessible?
And Amy, I know you were listening for part of the first half of the show where John Wellinghoff, formerly with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, said this is a national security issue as well, to democratize the grid so it's not susceptible to attacks.
Yeah, very important point, yeah. And I really appreciate an organic farmer calling in. I used to live in Maine and was a macrobiotic baker. We used to deliver thousands of loaves of macrobiotic bread throughout the state of Maine. But I think that, you know, that goes to even broader than energy issues, democratizing our economy and ensuring that, you know, as I was saying, the multinational corporations are trying to figure out a way to monopolize this market. They'll hold off until they've got control of it. But that goes to who we elect as our leaders, you know, the kind of laws we have that push for decentralization. And that's very important. Who controls the energy sources?
Tony, we're almost out of time. I got to let you go. We're going to pick one last phone call here from Ned in Mosinee. And Ned, we are running out of time, so please keep it succinct.
Sure. What we need to do is transition as rapidly as possible from a fossil fuel economy to a renewable energy policy. And the way we can do that is using a carbon fee and dividend approach. The carbon fee is assessed at the site of the wellhead, the coal mine, et cetera, and it's phased in over a period of, say, 10 years. And there's a lot of people, economists and otherwise, that like this. And the dividend returns 100% of all the fees collected back to the people, but it makes renewable energy at a cost-effective basis competitive and even cheaper than fossil fuels. It also saves lives due to air pollution and many other benefits. It also creates more jobs than it eliminates.
Ned, we got it. Let's let Amy respond here.
Well, you know, this is the Renewable Ideas Network, right? And it sounds like you've got some pretty good ideas. And we have to open the airwaves to hear the discussion of these ideas, which is why public media is so important. Like Democracy Now!, like Wisconsin Public Radio and public television, we need a media when we're discussing climate change that's not brought to us by the oil, gas, and coal companies, when we discuss war that's not brought to us by the weapons manufacturers. That is open dialogue for people across the planet coming up with solutions that are critical to our survival.
Nick Hyla, a final word on the Energy Fair coming up?
Yep, this is a systemic change. And in this systemic change, we need everybody involved. We need smart and principally regulators. And politicians, as Amy has mentioned, and I would just invite all of you to come and be part of this conversation and part of this transformation, and let's make this happen.
You expecting a big crowd on Saturday?
Always, the 20th? Always, and I hear it's going to be 70 and beautiful all 3 days.
Amy, 15 seconds here for a final word from you.
Well, I really look forward to coming out to Custer near Stevens Point. You know, it was many years ago that I spoke at Ashland College in Northland, Wisconsin, and I love to come back to the area and shore up independent media as well. Remember, like you're listening to today, we have to keep the airwaves open and free. We have to keep the internet open and free. And I hope people check out democracynow.org. I'll be talking about going to Wisconsin on the 20th, and I hope to see as many people there as possible, because it's you who saves the planet. You are the leaders we've been waiting for.
What good is the dawn that grows in today?
We want to thank today's guests, Amy Goodman, host and producer of Democracy Now! And the keynote speaker at the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair Saturday, June 20th. Also thanks to John Wellinghoff, past chair of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the keynote speaker on Friday, June 19th. And thanks to Nick Hyla, executive director of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. The fair takes place June 19th, 20th, and 21st in rural Custer off of Highway 10 east of Stevens Point. You can find out more at MidwestRenew.org. I'm Glenn Moberg. You can catch me and our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and I think our on-air producer, Jane Ritger, at the Energy Fair next weekend. Wisconsin Public Radio, a proud sponsor of this year's event and of the main stage entertainment. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by The Fifth Dimension, George Harrison, Van Morrison, The Youngbloods, Tower of Power, Louis Armstrong, and Willie Nelson and the Beach Boys. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.
I have the warmth of the sun within me tonight.